Session number 5868, Horton Monday, part 53.
When we were kids at school, they used to drum it into you so that you felt, you know, you was pleased to be Englishman then.
Yeah.
You know, you felt proud of yourself because every lesson you had at school, if it was geography, you'd got a map of the world, you see. And on this map, there was all blue, all red patches, you know. India, Canada, all different countries, Australia, New Zealand. All those red countries was what us kids naturally said, oh, that all belongs to us. See, well, you felt proud, you felt as proud, cock-a-hoop as the saying is. And you know, when a war started, anybody started on England, you think, oh, hell. And we had got the greatest navy in the world in those days, biggest navy in the world, and it was the proper saying in those days, Britannia ruled the waves and the sun never set on the British Empire. And it never did. When the sun was on one side of the world, it was dark the other side. And when it come round again, and as it went round the world, it never set on any part of the British Empire. Well, now you see, as kids, you were built up to that, and then you had the Crimean War. What happened in the Crimean War? Us kids thought it were marvellous. The charge of the Light Brigade, I don't know whether you ever hear of it, the charge of the Light Brigade in the Crimean War, and then you had the Boer War, all those sort of things. People came back from the Boer War, and they was as interested as all the kids was, even when they had the sports down the park at Wolverton. Just after the Boer War, they used to have a military band. This is news for you. Used to have a military band down the park. Oh, Sid Coles, this is amusing. Used to have this military band, Oxford and Bucks band, very often, from the barracks. They used to march round the park before the sports started, march round the park, and behind them was a party of those back home from the Boer War, you know, those that had returned then, see, the soldiers that had come back from the Boer War. That was a South African war. And us kids, you know, used to look goggle-eyed at them. You know, oh, hell, fancy, oh, ain't they heroes? You see, that's the impression you got at school. Well, once the war started and Britain declared war on Germany, the war started. Well, to us kids, it was, oh, hell, we still have to have a do. See, and that's the feeling you got. But now today, everybody, kids, children, youths, grown-ups, all now, they're so well educated, you wouldn't find them volunteering today like they did then. They'd wait till they was called up. In those days, they wasn't called up for nearly 2 years after the war started. Now, if there's a... if a breath of air comes across the country, there's likely to be a war. They'll bring in conscription, then my wait till it starts.
Well, yeah. Would you feel you wanted to fight? If there's a war, how would you feel about it?
Yeah, I'd
want to fight, yeah.
Yeah, but what I mean to say is that there's a vast difference today. I'm sure there is. I'll only go by what you hear on a wireless. I can't see it.
Well, I hope over the next few weeks we'll be able to, you know, you'll be able to find out a lot more about what actually life was like four people who actually fought in that war. I mean, in a way, you'll be doing history, but it'll be a slightly different history to the one you've probably done at school before, because you've only done history out of books, haven't you, really?
Yeah. The sort of history we did were, war history.
What sort of history did you do then, Greg?
You know, prehistoric and things like that.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't do any modern history at all, where you could actually talk to people who'd taken part in it?
No.
Okay. You talk about... that's an amused old Sid Coles. I told you how they used to march around the park before Whitsuntide sports at the park. Well, now, if they hold a sports meeting down the park, about all you'd find is two or three old men with a dog walking round. Now, there's a picture up there. You have a look at a crowd down the park. That's when I was in sport, tug of war sport.
Well, that tug of war, that's the crowd at the park, is it?
That's Wolverton Park. Now then, at a sports meeting. Now then, how many would you get there today?
You're right, two men and a dog. Yeah,
yeah. Hey?
Yeah.
There's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah. But why is that then, do you think?
No interest. No.
When was that picture taken, that tug of war?
About nine.
I went and borrowed the old school logbook from Wolverton Infant School.
Did you?
1914-18.
Go on.
And the thing that struck me was that the way in which people weren't actually as fit as probably they are today in many ways, you know, because I know they were only infants, but the epidemics they had, there was always measles, whooping cough, scarlet fever, diphtheria.
Yes. Tonsillitis, that was a regular thing. That was next to diphtheria, wasn't it? Tonsillitis. Yeah.
But, I mean, from what you remember of your school days,
mm-hmm.
Did you actually get all these illnesses or what? I mean,
I don't think any kid ever went to school at Bradley's didn't have the measles for a start.
Yeah.
Everybody had the measles. That was a recognised thing. Everybody in the house had the measles.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was recognised.
And the other thing that they had was, if you had good attendance during the month, they used to have a half day or something once a month. Is that right? Can you remember that?
No, don't remember that. No. No, but I'll tell you what I do remember. And I got a paper to prove it, too. That... you had to go to school till you was 14 years of age. And if you had so many attendances and you could get employment, you could leave school at the age of 13. I'll tell you what happened in my case. We're standing at the corner, it was my birthday on the Monday. And on the Sunday night, there was a bunch of us kids together, corner of North Street, down at Old Bradwell Road. We were standing there talking. A chap came up. He says, "Any of you boys want a job?" I was 13 the next day. I says, "Yes." "All right," he said. "I want a butcher boy." I said, "Oh." I said, "Yeah." He says, "When can you start?" I said, "Tomorrow morning." I was 12 then. Next day I was 13. I reported for work at Wolverton. Along Church Street they had a butcher's shop there. Well, there was butcher's shops in every street in them days. And it was Eastman's Foreign Meat Butcher's Shop. I started there 3 and 6 months a week. And that were working Saturdays as well, every day on Saturday, 3 and 6 a week. I started there, and I didn't go to school anymore. Papers, I expect my parents told them, you see. At least they come to the house why I wasn't at school. They used to visit your houses if you missed school for a few days. And come there, and that was arranged. And then I had a letter from the authorities to say that I'd reached that number of attendances, so I was free to carry on my employment, but in the event of me losing my employment before the age of 14, I'd got to go back to school. Yeah.
What was your mum and dad's attitude? I mean,
that was a recognised thing. Yeah, you wanted to get away and get a work and earn some money.
Oh, yeah, your dad didn't have any plans for you to go in the works?
That you couldn't go till you was age 14. Well, as soon as I was 14, you see, I left the butchers and went in the works and was apprenticed.
Yeah. Now, you know, with the butchers, you say it was foreign meat. Did that mean to say you didn't kill on the premises?
Oh, blimey, ain't you heard the difference? Oh, well, I could fill a book for you, tales about foreign meat. Mm. Foreign meat was frozen meat. English meat was not frozen. There were no fridges in them days, you know. Mm. Oh, hell no. Meat, if it wasn't sold Saturday night, it went bad. After a couple of 2 or 3 days in the summer. That's why they used to sell them off the slab of a Saturday night, auction them off, get rid of it.
So what about, you said this
and the old brine tub.
So you said this frozen meat, but you didn't have freezers in...
Frozen meat came from abroad. It was all foreign meat, frozen meat, Argentine, that's where it came from, the beef. And your, what do you call it? Your lamb and that come from New Zealand, and rabbits. Now I can tell. Well, this will interest you. It used to come. It was froze solid. It come in containers of some sort to the good sheds down at Wolverton, and then it was brought round to the butchers on them flat lorries. You see, all horse drawn. And they used to bring that, and it was got a sheet of very thin muslin stuff over it, lambs and all that, and it was froze solid stiff. And that was brought into your butchers of a Monday morning, or perhaps again in the middle of the week. Froze solid. Now that was foreign meat. Now I better tell you this before I drift away from it. There used to be boxes and all, bring a batch of boxes, and they were flat boxes with, what's it in, kidneys. There'd be a box of kidneys, see? Well, they were all froze solid, and my job in the winter, well, it was February until it was hellishly cold. That was my job then to get the hammer and a lever and break the top over these flat boxes. It's like they used to put herrings in. Tip it up and it used to come out solid. Kidneys all froze solid, one lump. And I used to have to break them apart and put them on a tray. Well, then after that, they'd be on this big tray, put them in the winder, and so they'd thaw out and the blood and all in the tray. And now that used to be the kidneys. And the hearts was done in the same, sheep's hearts or whatever it is, that was done just the same. And there was rabbits, boxes of rabbits, just the same, all froze solid stiff. Now they're what they call the frozen meat shop. Now then, here's your difference. A foreign meat shop, there was Eastman's, and the other prominent one was what they call the London Central Meat Company. One was along the front at Wolverton, the other one was in Church Street. You should know that with them books. And where the hell did I get to?
The difference between the two.
Oh, the difference between the two, that's right. Now, here's the difference. Rump steak, sirloin beef, rump steak and topside, they were the prominent cuts, see? They were sixpence a pound, that's 2.5p, a pound of rump steak. Now then, you went across the road to old Billy Strange and Tommy Edis on the corner, Jack Edy rather. They were English meat shops. Their rump steak and beef was eightpence a pound, tuppence more. Now then, here's some antics at Wolverton. They used to be hellishly careful not to be caught going into a foreign meat shop. They call them foreign meat shops, frozen meat shop. Not to be caught going there, because if you was, all hell. Fancy them after foreign meat. That style. Well, now, my job then, they used to bring the orders. I used to take the meat round. We used to have them all flat baskets. And meat, you know, be perhaps half a pound of steak somewhere with a certain address. And used to work it if it were Windsor Street and Cambridge Street. Perhaps them two I'd go out with first. Well, then, that used to be laid in your basket and your bill on top, see? You know, it might be a piece of beef or a few lamb chops or something, and stick it on. And another one would have a pound of liver or something and stick it on top. Well, if it happened to be warm weather, you know what it happened. The pipe used to thaw and stick. I used to have a hell of a job then, getting sorting it out. Well, now, if you went, I'll give you one instance. You know Cambridge Street, don't you? Work a long back ways, don't they? Well, about halfway up that street, there was a foreman in the works. And while a foreman was a big bug, you know, in them days, in the works. This foreman's wife used to send her order in, see? She wouldn't come in the shop, oh well, no. Used to send the order in for her meat, see? Well, blimey, when I first started, I remember his name, the boss, old Freddie Wright. He was the boss of the Eastmans then. Him and a chap named Bill Pigeon, the two men, and said, "Good, you know, with me load," and says, "Take this to, I think some of the sons are alive, so I won't give the name. Take this there." Well, I went to the door, knocked the front door, and said, "Here's your meat, mum." Took it. Says, "In future," she says, "when you bring my meat, don't bring it to the front door. Bring it round the back way. Don't bring it to the front door." What do you think of that? Because I got foreign meat. Didn't want the neighbours in the street to see that I'd served her with some foreign meat. Yeah, that's life in them days. That's true, so I sit here, that is. Do you know, I'll tell you something now, why this sort of thing is crossing my mind so much. You know when Chris Stafford, he started me off on this stunt, you know. Learning to make tapes, well, some of them was a hell of a rattle. I didn't know nothing about it. Well, I gradually got better as I went along and made them for his school. Well, I made him a lot of these tapes, you know, for him to play to the kids at school. That just amused them. Yeah, I made him a lot of them. But, oh, hell. But that life was different then. Different altogether. Well, will that amuse you?
It does, me.
Does it?
How would you like to have been a butcher's boy at 13, eh? You'd be alright, you wouldn't be at school anymore, would you?
Ah, don't forget how much pay I had.
How much?
3 and 6 pence. 3 shillings 15. 17.5p a week. That's right.
And you had to work how many hours? 54?
Well, quite that, I bet. In the works was 54. Well, when you worked, I went in there as an apprentice, that was 4 bob a week. 4 shillings a week. That was 54-hour week. 6 o'clock in the morning. Start at 6 in the morning. Breakfast, 8 till 8:15. back again from 1 till 2 dinner hour, back again at 5:30, start again at 6 a Saturday morning, and finish at 12 o'clock Saturday dinner time. That were 4 bob a week, 20p a week. What do you think of that?
20p a week, can't buy much
20p a week. Ah, but now you wait and see what you could buy with that. Now then, 20p, you know a packet of fags now, don't you? Well, they're going up again now. Soon be £1 for 20, won't they, the way they're going? That means they'll be a shilling each, fags. Well, they're blooming near a bob a piece now. Shilling each, fags. Now then, a shilling, 5p. How many fags do you reckon you could have got for a 5p piece then? There'll soon be one for a 5p. Have a guess.
10. 5.
A 5p piece. And there'll soon be one for 5p.
You reckon it's 5?
5 cigarettes.
You're a long way out. You'd get 60. And then. Work that out. Go on. I'm blooming soon be a school teacher. Them kids
so
tell
were,
me I am now.
So
I'll tell you how to work it out.
Fourpence for 20?
No. Yes. They used to be sold in packets of five a penny. Five a penny, those woodbines.
The old penny, that is.
Penny, yeah. Old penny, five a penny. Well, now a shilling, there were 12 pence in a shilling, weren't there? Five a penny, that's 5 12 is 60. 60 woodbines, and there were no, what do you call it, fillet tackle at the end. They were tobacco from beginning to end. Tobacco right through, and Virginia tobacco. Five a penny. 60 for a bob.
Did you always used to smoke woodbines? They're all different varieties.
Yes, yes. That's the... That should have brought you in with your, what's it, you know, army business. That was the routine smoke of the British Army, woodbines. Always woodbines, the British Army. Because you may have heard, and someone may have told you, or you will get to hear on that business you're on, that... you know, each regiment had a padre, didn't they? Each regiment had a padre. Well, now all those padres always used to carry woodbines in the pockets with you, with them, in the trenches. Because the first time I was wounded, when I laid on a stretcher at the bottom of the trench, I'd been confirmed a few weeks in front while I was out there behind the lines. And this parson, padre, come to me, and as soon as he got there, he knew me. See, because I'd just been confirmed, and he stuck a woodbine in me, mate, straight away. And everybody that were wounded, they used to put a woodbine in the mouth. Now, there was one of the padres that became the Vicar of St. Martin's in the Fields in London. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that?
I've heard of the place.
Yes. Well, he became the vicar there, and he was called Woodbine Willie. Now then, surely to goodness, if you ask anyone that ever went to that war, ask him about Woodbine Willie, and they'll tell you the same. He was a padre. Woodbine Willie, and he was made vicar of the St. Martin's in the Fields, Trafalgar Square in London.
What did the officers smoke? What fags did they smoke?
Well, I couldn't be accurate, because you see there was so many different sorts. But the routine was woodbines.
But of course, woodbines didn't have any cigarette photos in, did they? It was the
no,
more expensive brand.
No, and you see you didn't... the ones that had cigarette cards and silk flags, you've heard of them, silk flags in, was BDV were the one that used to have the silk flags. And then you had a card in Pliers and
Gold Leaf?
No, that don't sound right. Gold.
Senior Service?
No, Gold something.
Gold Flake?
Gold Flake. You got it. Gold Flake. Pliers. And now one that was fairly prominent, which I mentioned on one of them tapes, was Capstan. That was all packets of 10. I never remember any packets higher than packets of 10 during the war. Well, when you got beyond the packet of 10, then you started having tins. Tins of 50. You know, there used to be a round tin, and then at the top, the lid had a sort of a little catch on it, see? And when you wanted to open that tin, you pressed that catch down and twisted the lid round, and it cut the tin foil on top of the cigarette, so it kept them watertight and airtight. Tin of 50, they were either pliers, woodbines, any sort. And do you know how much that tin of 50 used to cost in the canteen?
Well, we can have a guess now.
You reckon up now, of course you can.
10 pence?
You got it. 10 pence, yeah. Oh, you were very good at school. I was like, I shan't be able to learn you much.
One thing, I was going to say, just mentioning there, about that was one thing I actually had forgot to ask about chaplains, but what was it that made you get confirmed?
I don't know. I told you early on in them tapes, I never used to go to church, but every child, I don't care who or what he was, whether he lived in a backyard or a mansion, every child either went to chapel or church. Always. The parents always sent their children to chapel or church. And when you were little and you went to church or chapel and taught religion, you never forgot it. Never. Now, when we was coming in and out the line at Plug Street Wood, every time you come out, there'd be somebody killed, one of your mates. And you used, where we come out of the trenches, through the wood, the duck board used to lead by our old air book cemetery. And I used to look at them crosses and I used to think, I bet I won't be long for on one of them. You know, that sort of feeling. And anyway, when we was out, the padre said that there was a bishop coming to confirm anyone that would like to be confirmed. So I asked, was there anyone? I said, yes, I will. Because I had a feeling that, you know, I might not long before we passed over, because you didn't know when it was going to happen. So I decided I would. I don't know how many of us there was, but I reckon I was only one out of our little bunch, because we was a lousy lot, this little clique. You know what I mean, happy-go-lucky. I think I was the only one. I can't remember any of the others, but there was about half a dozen all told. And it was the Bishop of St. Petersburg, South Africa, that come and confirmed us behind the lines. And I've got that confirmation card in the drawer in the front room. Yeah.
What was the attitude of your... people like Sid and so on, did they?
Oh, no, didn't notice. Oh, no.